Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Hour two of the Eric Ainge Show coming at you live from Rusty Wallace Kia of Knoxville. You know that's I-75 and Callahan Drive. It is right here, the home of the 200,000-mile warranty. And Brian, right here, moving forward, they're not just going to double something.
They're going to triple the factory rebates on all new Kias. Triple them on all new Kias.
And you get that 200,000-mile warranty as well.
Every new vehicle. Jake will join us coming up in a little bit. To chat about that and to play some Would You Rather.
What are you wearing, Jake from Kia?
Probably khakis.
Probably khakis.
Probably khakis. Probably. 3 years ago today, Tennessee hired John Curry as athletics director.
You know, John Curry did.
He got us Tony Vitello. He brought back the Lady Vol logo.
I think whoever the athletic director would have been would have gotten that done.
The Lady Vol deal?
Yeah.
Depending on who it was. It was more important to some people than others.
I'm only going to give him so much credit for that is what I'm saying.
But he found Tony Vitello.
Yeah, and that's really where I in my good things he did list.
Yeah, there were some facility things behind the scenes, but he set the stage for – he opened up some coffers that had been cut off that needed to be reopened. But that football coaching search will get you, and it did. And now we have Phil Fulmer, and everything seems to be working out very, very nicely.
Everything happens for a reason.
That's right.
I was supposed to go to an event tonight with Coach Fulmer and his awesome daughter, Brittany.
Yeah?
Yep, down in Chattanooga.
Is it?
A daddy-daughter deal for a nonprofit down in Chattanooga tonight.
Is it off because you can't take your daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going by myself.
I got to bring
I'm not going to the daddy-daughter
deal. Yeah, that's probably right.
With just daddy.
It's a good idea.
That'd be weird.
Yeah. You want to take the kid in a SARS mask.
That'd be weird.
All right.
It's sad, dude. She got a dress and new shoes for it, and she wasn't.
You're going to have to take her out for daddy-daughter
date night. I'm going to have to find somewhere to take
her. Nice restaurant that probably serves chicken tendies and fries. And
yeah. She'll get hooked up.
Okay. 656-9900 if you want to join us here on the Eric Ainge Show. Before we talk about some of the programs that need to get back, Bryce Thompson weighed in on Juwan Jennings. The tweet was from Tom Downey, a reporter covering the NFL Combine. Tennessee wide receiver Juwan Jennings with a 4.73 40-yard dash. Rough. Hashtag NFL Combine. Bryce Thompson retweets it and says, still gets double-teamed every game, though.
That's a fact.
Yep.
His 4.73 was unguardable by any one person in the SEC this year.
Yeah. There was a question to Stuart Mandel's mailbag on The Athletic this week, and I thought it was fascinating. Nebraska, USC, Miami, Florida State. Which of these college football powers is most likely to be in the playoff hunt first?
Ooh.
They all have their challenges. They all have their positives. Nebraska. We'll start with Nebraska.
Okay.
I think their biggest challenge is they're in Nebraska, and the game has changed for them. You can't just recruit a whole bunch of big guys and hope to grind it out against everybody.
Yeah, it's not the 90s.
Their positive is they have Scott Frost, who's one of the most innovative offensive minds in college football right now. USC. Their strength is they're in Los Angeles. They could, if they had it rolling, recruit the best players in California every year like they were in the mid-90s and or the late 90s and then again in the 2000s. The negative is facilities, and right now their head coach. Miami has location, location, location. They have recruits around there. They have a winning tradition. All of these schools do. They play in an NFL stadium. I think their weakness is their ability to attract a top-flight head coach. Manny Diaz is there now.
Is he in year two?
This will be his second year. But when they have had an opening, they have had a hard time getting that can't-miss candidate. They thought they had it in Mark Richt, but he was a guy that on the twilight of his career that doesn't seem to have been as invested as you would hope. Manny Diaz is, but is he a good head coach? Nobody can say yes or no. And then Florida State just hired Mike Norvell, who was kind of the can't-miss coaching candidate.
Yep.
Did it for a long time at Memphis. Did not have to build the Memphis program. Took over one that was successful. But he has a lot of advantages. Their disadvantage is they play in the same conference as Clemson, who's been one of the dominant teams in college football, and Jimbo Fisher left there because they wouldn't spend money on football. So
a lot of different
there's
a
lot
dynamics.
Of positives. Yeah, there's a lot of positives and there's a lot of negatives for these four. Who do you see as most likely to come back?
We're gonna back into it. Okay?
Okay. All right.
And I'm gonna ask you the questions, and you can kind of help guide me on.
All right.
Let's start. We're gonna go through the things that actually determine whether or not you are winning.
Okay.
Okay. So first is recruiting.
Okay.
Which one of these schools, or rank the schools in recruiting? From top
ability to recruit right now?
Yeah, I'd say you're in year one or year two of all of these guys.
Except Clay Helton at USC.
He's in year six.
Yeah, but he's kind of in year two of a rebuild for whatever reason. I would say Florida State 1, Miami 2, USC 3, Nebraska 4.
I'm pulling up the 2020 rankings for how these schools
USC
went.
Has had a very rough go of it this recruiting cycle.
Yeah, Miami came in 13th.
Yeah.
So that's the first one on the list. Tell me when you see the other.
Florida State's 22nd.
22.
Nebraska was ahead of them. They're 20.
20.
And then you're going to have to scroll for a while, I believe, to find USC. They were down in the 50s at one point.
No way.
They are. You're still scrolling.
Oh,
you're going to have to click
load more. I have to click load more to get them? Okay, outside the top 50.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're outside the top 50, you're in trouble. So if we go by that, then
okay.
I'd say the difference between Miami's 13th rated class and Nebraska's 20th rated class and Florida State's 22nd rated class are
negligible.
Yeah, and I think that Florida State coming in at 22 under year one of Norvell is more impressive than Miami's 13 or Nebraska's 20 in year two of their coach.
I would agree over Miami. Nebraska, I think, being able to recruit that well at Nebraska has a certain...
This is Scott Frost's third year, isn't it? Wouldn't it be his third year?
Yeah, no. Adrian Martinez, he went UCF National
Man, that's
Championship
a long,
2 years ago.
That's a long time, it seems like.
Yeah.
Because I wrote year two. I mean, that's
UCF
what I thought.
National
but I was sitting there thinking about it, and I'm like,
this was his first year.
That was
no.
I don't think...
Now,
I don't know,
No, because last year was his Sailor Martinez's second year because they were picked... I said it was a year early, so it's his third year.
That's what I okay, yeah, third year.
It's his third
okay.
year. Yeah.
All right. Well, then that coming in at 20 and then Miami at 13, they're all comparable in recruiting. We could say that. Like I don't think players are going to be the one that determines that necessarily. I do think it's easier for Norvell and Miami in general than it is for Scott Frost at Nebraska.
Yeah.
All right. The competition. Who are they playing against? If we're saying that it's a wash in recruiting, because they're all going to be top, we call it 10 to 25.
Yeah. I think competition-wise, USC's the easiest competition. They're in the Pac-12. You know,
it's definitely not Nebraska.
No. Nebraska is...
In the Big Ten.
Yeah. I would say with Florida State and Miami, they both have... The positive that they're in the ACC, but the negative in that the gap to the best team in the ACC is massive. The gap between 1 and 2 in the ACC is going to be huge no matter who it is.
Oh, yeah, golly. Look at this, dude. Nebraska has to play Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Penn State, Ohio State.
That's to close out the season. Starting with Ohio.
Yeah.
You went in reverse.
So they go.
Halloween on is miserable.
Ohio State.
On the road.
Penn State.
Home.
Iowa.
On the road.
Wisconsin.
On the road.
Minnesota.
At home.
That on most years, even last year, that's four top 25 teams.
Yeah.
And Iowa's a wild card because at that point in the year, you never know
yeah.
for them. And then they do have the Rutgers of the world, Illinois, the Northwesterns. They play Cincinnati and Central Michigan out of conference, though.
All right, so if we're looking,
those are both hard games.
So if we're looking at schedule slash conference, I would say Miami's the easiest because they're in the Coastal Division. Florida State's the second hardest because they're in the Atlantic with Clemson. Then USC. USC, then those two, then obviously Nebraska's the hardest.
And I'm going to say in the current state of everything, it'll be easier for Miami to get to an ACC championship game and lose than it will be for Florida State to even win the division.
Absolutely.
But both of them aren't sniffing winning that conference championship anytime soon.
Right.
Nebraska's not sniffing it. The only one of these schools, to your point, that just doesn't have a clear, obvious number one in the conference is the Pac-12.
Yeah, you put it together.
Oregon's good, and they just Cristobal just recruited at a top 10 level this year, which is not something that ever happens at Oregon.
But if you put it together, USC's in the Pac-12 championship game with a puncher's chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now, and right now too, Washington's going in a different direction with their program. Stanford has been on a serious decline under David Shaw lately, so. Some of these, because on any given year, if USC's back and rolling, like when I was growing, the Pac-10 football was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, Washington was incredibly competitive. Oregon was in the Rose Bowl every other year. USC and UCLA was even good back then.
So what's our next metric?
I mean, that to me, I think that if you look at recruiting, other than the fact that Clay Helton, who's in year six, is recruiting outside the top 50, I don't know that he's recruiting at a level high enough
and that's
in the crappy division. He's got the easiest route by far.
And there's the rub, because I want to say USC. I want to say, because
that's where I would,
they
that's
have
where
the
I'm
easy
leaning,
track.
That's where I'm leaning anyway, simply because I think that when you put Clemson in the ACC and Ohio State and six other teams in the Big Ten, Nebraska, Miami, and Florida State aren't sniffing anything until Clemson or Ryan Day's in year two, man.
I want to say USC, but I think they have to make a coaching change before they can do it.
Well, if they're going to have to make this is a good way to back into it.
Okay.
Let's wrap it up when we get back. Because I think this, we've just shown what USC needs to do.
656-9900. Is how you join us on the Eric Ain Show, live from Rusty Wallace, Key of Knoxville, on The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to the Eric Ain Show, live from Rusty Wallace, Key of Knoxville. Brian Rice and I will be here till 12 o'clock today. On this apparently snowy Friday here, coming at you, but rain, snow, sleet, sun, doesn't matter. Right now, you're still getting you can triple the factory rebate on all new Kias, and every one of them is coming with a 200,000-mile warranty today and tomorrow while they're open here at Rusty Wallace Kia of Knoxville.
It's probably the right decision to move the softball games to tomorrow.
Yeah,
I don't think I've broadcasted in snow before. Well, maybe once.
You know, I threw 7 touchdowns one time, Brian, when it was...
It wasn't snowing like this.
It was colder than this.
It was colder than this.
It was definitely colder than this.
A lot colder in the upper deck than it was down the field. We're talking who's back first.
Reset it for everybody.
USC, Nebraska, Miami, or Florida State.
And the back, we are saying, is competing for a chance to be in the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah, to be a playoff, to be in the conversation for the playoff. In going through, we've looked at the coaches, we've looked at the schedule slash conferences, we've looked at the recruiting.
This is terrible, by the way. I was going through looking because I was going to find out where USC actually does come in, because they, when you look at schedule, it's not close. They have, it's not an easy path by any stretch, but they have the most realistic path. Because Nebraska is not going to beat any of these teams in the Big Ten anytime soon.
They can start out 6-0, and then they're going to finish 6-6.
You know, Miami. We might have to just make an argument for Miami, because Miami is going to have an opportunity to win some games that maybe they're not ready to yet.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You'd have to pull up their schedule for this next year. I don't think they play Clemson.
They're in opposite division, so I don't think.
Yeah, and I know, you know, that, but like on any given year, I don't know how the ACC rotates. I'm sure it's possible that they draw them every year, but
they don't draw them every year. This coming season, they do not play Clemson. Well, now it won't load. They do not play Clemson. No,
I didn't think so. So
they do. They play their cross division rivals, Florida State, that they play, and then North Carolina.
They have a non-conference against Michigan State, Temple. That's by far the most winnable schedule.
Right,
is Miami's, and they're recruiting at the highest level, mm-hmm, at number 13. So I think the answer is ultimately going to end up being Miami, because they have the easiest path. They're the best at recruiting, and that you're talking about getting to find a way to upset Clemson on any given day, one day. I know that's still unlikely.
Right.
But if they recruit at a top 10, top 13 level for 2 or 3 years,
well, if you go undefeated and your only losses to Clemson in the ACC championship game, you're still going to be in the playoff discussion.
Well, you'd be in the discussion. Yeah, I think their schedule would be a little weak to get them in.
Sure.
that being said, in the Pac-12, the answer is USC.
Yeah.
And that's where we both were leaning. But listen to where they come in recruiting. In the Pac-12, Oregon leads the Pac-12. They're first at number 12. Washington is second at number 16 nationally. Stanford, third, 21st nationally. Excuse me. Arizona State, fourth, 24th nationally. So there's four top 25 teams in recruiting in the Pac-12. Utah comes in at 29. UCLA, 32. Colorado,
yep,
36. Cal Berkeley, 39. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to get outside of the top 50.
55 is where they ranked in the 24/7 Sports Composite.
And Oregon State, of all teams, mm-hmm, comes in at 53rd. So
a more important number than that, though, Eric, the number of players they signed. 13.
How do you do that?
That's a great question. They signed 2 4-stars. Gary Bryant Jr., the wide receiver, and offensive lineman Jonah Monheim. They signed 13 kids out of 25 spots that they had.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They were 10th.
They let left Clay Helton dangling for a month on whether or not they were going to fire him or not. And that's why they recruited that way. Because leading into the early signing period, it was Clay Helton might be fired after the early signing period.
I only kind of blame him. I mean, he's the one that put himself in a situation.
Absolutely.
to be on in limbo so bad, but at the same time, they're not going to get anywhere near the top of the Pac-12 with the 55th best recruiting class in the country and only signing 13 guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they may have the easiest path, but they're not going to sniff that path anytime soon. So I'm going to lean Miami overall. I think that Florida State having to play Florida in the non-conference, because, hey, non-conference games matter just as much as conference games when you start talking playoff.
Sure.
So the fact that Florida State has to end every season with Dan Mullen and the Florida Gators, and they have to play Clemson, I mean, you're basically starting your every year off, right now anyway, until things change.
0-2.
You're 0-2. And in the ACC, we watched it with defending national champion Clemson this past year. You can't just go win all your games. You have to win all your games with some pizzazz.
Yeah.
They were the defending national champs, and they were dropping like flies. I mean, they would win and drop because of LSU and Ohio State, because of the strength of the SEC and the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You know, Utah was right on the cusp of getting in last year. Oregon, that Pac-12 championship game at one point in time was almost a play-in game depending on how things shook out.
Yeah.
So Washington has been in the playoff. They're going a new direction, but still they've been in the playoff. Oregon, haven't they been in the playoff earlier?
They were in the playoff the first year.
First year, yeah. So Oregon has been in. Washington has been in. Oregon is still close. Utah was on the cusp. You got three other schools recruiting at a top 10 level. I mean, a top 25 level. I mean, that's brutal for them.
It's a tough. It's a tough rundown.
The answer in doing it and backing into it with recruiting, scheduling, who the coach is, all that is Miami.
All right. The follow up question is then: in the next 5 years, do any of these teams do it?
No.
And that's why.
No, but here's the thing: if you threw Tennessee in there. We should. I mean, we could do the same formula.
You're recruiting better than those teams. You play in a tough division. I think you play in the toughest division in football, and then you have Alabama and or LSU on the other side.
The difference, Miami, they are number one in recruiting in their division. You have to win your division
first
to have a chance to win the conference, to have a chance to be in the playoff.
Yep.
And right now, Miami has the number one recruiting class in their division. Florida State has the second best recruiting class in their division. Nebraska, I don't know what they are, but they're at best third, if not worse, in their division. I mean, that's the problem. Nebraska comes in at 20. I don't know the divisions
in the Big Ten. Nebraska is
maybe first in their division. Honestly,
they're fourth in the Big Ten.
But Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State are on the other side, aren't they? Yeah, I mean they're Michigan, Ohio State. Yeah, they're first in their division. So, and not by a long shot. I mean, Wisconsin's not too far behind them.
Yeah.
At 25, and that's who the current leader in that division is.
Yeah,
isn't Minnesota in that division as well? Yeah, Minnesota isn't too far behind them. They're at 38. So, but that would lend itself to Scott Frost. I mean, you have to say if he's going to recruit at the number one level in his division, then at some point in time, it'll be expected that he's able to win said division. So, maybe you could have that conversation. We're currently recruiting third best in our division. As hard as Pruitt is working and as good a job as he is doing,
I think there's
the third best recruiting class in our division.
Hot take on Nebraska, I think there's a good chance they start out 7-0 and then lose their last five.
Yeah. Right.
And then everybody will be mad at Scott Frost. We know the feeling. 6569-900, if you want to weigh in on the Eric Haines Show. When we come back, Jerry Jones talked about his shower thoughts. You should not do that in public. It's the Eric Haines Show. It's FM 99.1, the sports animal. Oh.
Welcome back into the Eric Haines Show on the Sports Animal. We're live here at Rusty Wallace Kia of Knoxville. I always love when we get booked here, Brian, because my gal Joe is here. So I get to come say hi to Joe.
She sent us Valentine's Day candy on Valentine's Day.
I know, and the gliders.
That was
I don't know where you got those gliders. They looked like they were probably like dollar store gliders. They fly like 200 feet. I'm not kidding. When you were a kid, who didn't like a good glider?
Yeah.
My son, Turner, was out there throwing the thing, and he's not a great thrower of things. That apple did fall far, but he could throw that glider like a champ. It's awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Joe's the best.
Jerry Jones shared his shower thoughts at the NFL Combine yesterday.
Before you get into this, what are your thoughts on shower thoughts?
Well, I mean, I do my best thinking either in the shower or taking a walk.
I didn't think that's where you were going to say taking a...
No.
Thought that was going to go a different
taking
direction.
Taking a walk. Either around Westtown or
I thought you might have meant like taking the Browns to the Super Bowl.
No, no. I don't do any thinking there because I don't spend any time there. I'm okay. An in-and-out guy.
You don't have kids, that's why.
Nope.
All right, let's think
sure
here. In general, I'm pro shower thoughts because I like you. That's a time where no one's going to come bother you, right? You're just sitting there.
But I'm not going to share that I was thinking about X in the shower.
When I had a programming change due to the late Jeff Jacoby's decline in health.
Yes.
And just
was I your shower thought?
I may or may not have landed on Brian Rice in the shower.
Well, that's a little off-putting, but I'll take the job anyway.
Obviously, I'm kidding. I don't remember that, but I think it was listening to you do a fill-in with Mickey or something.
Jerry Jones was asked yesterday if he was considered if he would consider bringing back Dez Bryant to Dallas. Dez Bryant has not played. Quote, "I've thought a lot about it in the shower."
Jerry Jones just sitting around thinking about Dez in the shower. Eyes closed or eyes open?
I'm not going to answer that.
That'd be real weird if his eyes were closed.
I'm not going to answer that. He also said yesterday he hopes Jason Witten is never anything but a Cowboy. That is up to you, Jerry Jones.
Is Witten trying to play again?
Yeah, he's considering coming back for another year, not necessarily in Dallas.
Dude's a freak.
I don't want to see him play somewhere other than Dallas.
What is more awkward? Because we got to watch Peyton play in a different uniform.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, but it wasn't his choice.
True, but it was still, I mean, just like that's not what Peyton looks like. Peyton is supposed to be in white and blue.
But after a couple of years, it seemed normal.
What's going to be more weird, Jason Witten in a different jersey or Tom Brady? Because Tom Brady, to me, is like...
It depends on what it is.
He is the Patriots.
It depends on what it is. If he's a Raider, I go, oh, well, that looks fairly normal, because we've seen some quarterbacks in the twilight end up as Raiders. And if we're looking at Tom Brady 12 in a Titans jersey, that's going to a number 12 Titans
that
is going to
look
odd.
Weird, right? It's I'm just saying it would look weird. I mean, that'd be fun. Gosh, that'd be awesome.
Jerry Jones said, quote, "I would hope that he would not ever be anything but a Cowboy. I do think he can play. I think he can make a real contribution to the Cowboys." He did not say if that was while he was shampooing.
Mm. Yeah, Witten was definitely eyes open.
Yeah. Jerry Jones then referred to Dak Prescott as a family member, but then said that the deal has to fit. Now, Mike McCarthy had gone on and on. We discussed this at length yesterday about that he thinks Dak Prescott is a Super Bowl quarterback.
I tend to agree. I think Dak has not fared great in times in which they've got to have a win, but it's not a must win.
Yeah.
Like, Dak's done pretty well towards the end of the season when they've put themselves in such a hole that they have to win or they're mathematically eliminated. I want to see Dak Prescott play at that level before they get to the point of being nearly mathematically eliminated.
Yeah.
That's my thing with Dak. I'm like, you got to – the middle of the year on a Thursday night game against the Cardinals, you have got to be as dialed in as you are. I mean, all the great ones are.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
All the great ones are their number one attribute. Number one is consistency. Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. The only reason Phillip Rivers gets talked about in such a positive light is because the one thing he's always been is incredibly consistent. You know what you got. The hard ones are the Cam Newtons, Baker Mayfield. Their ceiling is as high as anyone's, but their floor is lower because they hit it so often.
Right.
So,
I think he can be there. I don't think he has been helped with the coaching staff around him, and it has slowed his development at times. But at other times, you see flashes of the player that he could be. I think it is rare that he makes the catastrophic mistake that costs you a ball game.
No, and I think he's actually gotten a lot smarter, and I think he plays. I think Kellen Moore has been good for him.
Yeah.
I think having a young guy that he can ride with, identify with, there. I think the change in the game a little bit has helped them. I think they often get too reliant on Zeke and the offensive line to be maulers. And just run people over, because so often teams aren't going to let that. If you're game planning against the Cowboys, you're for sure saying, Dak, you got to beat us And we're not just going to make it that easy on you. We're going to change up how we defend you, how you defend, we defend the receivers, how we stop the run game. But we're always going to have an emphasis on stopping Zeke. Because you can't do that. If Zeke's doing the little eat thing and he's ripping off 8 to 12 yards a carry and
everybody's
he's feeling
happy.
Good, then you're not beating the Cowboys.
Yeah.
The Cowboys, too, man, they're I would argue their biggest downfall lately has been their ability to stay healthy as a franchise. I mean, between Vander Esch and Lee at linebacker and the different guys they have in and around the linebacker position only, they've been crazy banged up.
The full quote from Jerry Jones is this, quote, "I feel the same that I feel about Steven," talking about his son. "There's no going forward without Steven or one of your family members, so you've got to get it figured out. This is a deal I have to get done, but it has to fit," unquote.
I think that's fair. I mean, Emmitt Smith has come out and said it. All right, if you're Dak Prescott and you're sitting there, and guys like Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and...
But Emmitt Smith said he should take less and make the endorsements. And Emmitt Smith's the guy who held out for multiple games to get to become the highest paid running back in football.
Yeah.
I
think it's rich.
Love you as a player, Emmitt, but I don't have anything just for what you have to say.
I think it's rich that Emmitt is the one saying that. But a lot of guys are saying it. I mean, Patrick Mahomes and his agent are saying different but similar things, basically saying, like, Mahomes is already in the position. And neither one of them makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott currently, as
they
we
don't
sit
make
here
much
today,
money at all.
They don't make hardly anything. Relatively speaking, is
in
what
the,
is
in NFL
course.
Dollars, they don't make
relatively
much money.
Speaking, yes. And I think they're both worth it. I think Mahomes is already taken the idea in contract talks and timing in which they get a deal done, whatever that looks like, whenever it looks.
Yeah.
On not giving them necessarily the hometown discount, but finding a way to structure the contract to where he still has the pieces around him to be a competitive for the AFC and a chance to win a Super Bowl year in and year out for the next decade.
Yeah.
And the only franchises, in my opinion, that have consistently done that are the franchises that A, have a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
And B, have a franchise quarterback willing to structure deals to the benefit of the franchise in return for heavy say-so in the draft process.
Yeah.
And free agent moves. That's the one thing. So, like, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are the two guys that I'm referencing the most. You could even put you could put Drew Brees in that as well. They take different types of deals, front-loaded, back-loaded, more guaranteed, less guaranteed, whatever it needs to be. And then they also, like, back, don't get, like, Peyton Manning, when he was in his prime with the Colts, he was in every draft meeting. He watched all the film. He was as much a GM for them as any GM was.
Yeah.
His say mattered, and it was because they compensated him in such that he had say in it. You know, you're not going to sit there and say, sure, I'll take less money, and then look at the moves made, kind of like your Tom Brady. Tom Brady recently is saying, he said he'll take less money, you know, and for the last couple deals he's taken, and then he just got done playing an entire season with not having the right pieces around him, probably because he didn't have enough say in the draft process.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's when it hurts you. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers didn't do that. Aaron Rodgers just said, give me the, you know, he wants all the money. And then next thing you know, his best friend and target, Jordy Nelson's no longer on the team.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you can't have it both ways. You can't have get paid the most money your team can afford to possibly pay you and also have all the guys you want to have on the team.
Yeah.
And right now they've got a bunch of guys in limbo, and you can always draft and all that. But if I were Mahomes, I'd say I want to be involved in the evaluating and the drafting and the free agent signings of this franchise, kind of like LeBron has done in years. You know, you're involving yourself in the overall success of the organization at every level. You are as invested as anybody else because you look at your contract as to leaving millions of dollars on the table for some say-so and who's on the team so you can continue to be competitive, because you know you're ultimately going to make plenty of money. Is anyone worried that Patrick Mahomes or Dak Prescott is going to retire and not have made millions of dollars?
No.
No.
All right, we'll come back. 656-9900 if you want to join us here on the Eric Haines Show. A big change in the CBA. Say what that is next on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Live from Rusty Wallace Kia of Knoxville, you're listening to the Eric Haines Show on the Sports Animal. Brian Rice, myself, EA, will be here for another hour or so as we wrap up our show and pass you off to Sports 180 and then Sports Talk after that.
Lucky. And then it's the weekend.
And then it's the weekend. Yep, and we'll hit the weekend preview in the last hour and get you ready for Tennessee, Florida as well.
A new collective bargaining agreement may or may not be ratified by the NFL players next week, but the one that is proposed adds in a major change when it comes to players holding out. I would say players holding out is a, it's good for us on Sports Talk Radio because it gives us something to talk about, it's not great if it's your team. The new CBA would make it virtually impossible for players to hold out.
How is that possible? What does it say?
It will make the daily training camp fines mandatory for players operating under their second contracts. That's a big difference because when a new deal is done, most of the time now, the fines are wiped out. This would make the fines mandatory. So if a player incurs a $40,000 per day fine for staying away from camp, well, if they're out for 10 days, the full $400,000 would have to come out of his pocket before he would be eligible to play again. And neither he nor the team can excuse it.
What do you think about that? That'll never get passed.
Well, it's in there. I mean, CBA is passed, that's in there. They can't line item veto it.
Everything that I've seen, there's the only outspoken members of the NFL are the ones in complete opposition of a lot of different things in the CBA.
Yep.
I don't think the playing a 17th game would be a deal breaker.
It seems though that it is for these guys. That's what they keep coming back to.
I mean, the difference is, I do think that they just need, it needs to be explained to them that by playing another game, we're increasing your revenue share.
And I think their point is that their revenue share is going to increase considerably with the next TV deal anyway, and an extra game of inventory isn't going to significantly impact that.
And I don't disagree with it. I mean, I challenge the 17th game. What do you actually get out of it? Like, what's the reason? Why do we have to have another week of football?
Because they want another week of inventory that they control. They want another week of inventory to sell. And the 17th game allows them to carve out an extra package to sell to somebody of international games that take place in the morning, or you split them between the international games in the morning. They get a bigger reach over there. They basically can put games at neutral sites without hurting the gate by taking one game away from a fan base. I mean, that's what they want. So that's kind of where it is.
I mean, I like them not testing or making THC. Positive THC tests, that doesn't then get you put into the program and all that kind of stuff. I think that's a conversation we don't have to have on the air, but if the alternate for guys is going that route, if I were a GM or an owner, and I had the option of my players seeking, because they're going to seek pain relief. I mean, there's a reason that 80% of football players, when they are done playing, are broke, divorced, have a substance abuse problem, or a combination of all of them.
Yeah.
And I think that I would feel much better about my guys looking to THC as opposed to opioids.
Yeah.
And they've got away from that. And the country's made it better, harder for that to exist. And the NFL's no different, but I like that they're doing that. I don't care if they play another game or not. That doesn't bother me. I like the holdout part because I hate that part of the game. I mean, from a fan standpoint, there's nothing worse than you loving a player and the player not coming to camp and not reporting. Like, there's no way that as a Cowboys fan it felt good to watch Zeke hold out.
Yeah.
You might understand it to an extent, but even then you're asking people that can't identify with, you know, holding out over $2 million when the contract's worth 60. You know what I mean? Like, normal people look at that and they're like, shut up and play. You're going to make $60 million.
Yeah.
You know, and I like how they're starting to lean towards getting contracts more guaranteed. That's already happening organically, you know, even if not for the CBA. So I think that's a good thing. Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I just hope there's not a work stoppage.
Yeah, that will not be ideal. We'll come back. Hour number three of the Eric Haines Show. We'll have the weekend preview, a Tennessee-Florida preview. We'll play Would You Rather, all that and more on the Eric Haines Show, FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.